Hello and welcome.
Today, we're diving into the principles of student-centered instruction, what it is, why it matters, and how teachers can make it work in real classrooms.
Absolutely, Lisa. Student-centered instruction is really about shifting the focus from the teacher simply delivering content to students, to designing learning experiences, where students actually construct understanding and take ownership of their learning.
Exactly. It's a move away from the classic sage-on-the-stage model to more of a guide-on-the-side approach, isn't it? Students are encouraged to set their own goals, make choices about how they learn, and reflect on their progress.
Right, and one of the core principles here is learner agency. So students aren't just passengers. They're actively involved in setting their learning targets and deciding how they'll demonstrate their understanding.
And teachers support that autonomy, but within structured expectations. It's not a free-for-all. There are still clear goals and support systems in place.
Another big principle is inquiry and problem orientation. So rather than just memorizing facts, students are encouraged to ask questions, investigate real problems, and communicate their findings.
That's so important for motivation. When students see how their learning connects to their lives or the community, it just feels more relevant and authentic. Tasks become meaningful, not just busy work.
Absolutely. And this is where relevance and authenticity come in. For example, students might present their work to community members or publish it online, giving them a real audience and purpose.
And we can't forget about differentiation and inclusivity. Instruction has to be responsive to students' individual strengths, languages, cultures, and needs. Universal Design for Learning, or UDL, really helps guide this process.
Definitely. It means providing multiple entry points and supports, so every student has access. Tools like scaffolded texts or graphic organizers can make a big difference.
Collaboration is another key principle. Structured group work helps students build those vital 21st century skills, communication, critical thinking, and creativity.
And it's not just about putting students in groups and hoping for the best. There's real intention behind it, like assigning specific roles, researcher, recorder, presenter, and rotating those roles to keep things fair and accountable.
Exactly. And formative, ongoing assessment is so central, far more than just a test at the end. Teachers provide timely, specific feedback, and students use that to revise and improve their work.
Which ties into reflection and metacognition. Students are regularly asked to reflect on what they've learned, how they learnt it, and where they want to go next. Teachers model this thinking process too.
So, if we look at how roles shift, the teacher moves from being a lecturer and the sole authority to a designer of experiences, a facilitator, and a coach. The students, meanwhile, become active constructors of knowledge, collaborators, and creators.
That's a huge cultural shift for some classrooms. But practical strategies can really help foster that sense of agency. For instance, giving students clear, actionable learning targets, sometimes called can-do statements.
And letting students co-create the success criteria is powerful. When they help design the rubrics or checklists, it demystifies what success looks like and builds ownership.
Offering meaningful choices is another great strategy. Whether it's the content they study, the product they create, like an essay or video, or even the process, with options for working solo or in groups.
Choice boards or learning menus are excellent for scaffolding those options, especially for students who might be new to making decisions about their learning.
Goal setting and self-assessment are big too. Students can track their progress in a learning log or digital portfolio and use rubrics to self-assess before handing in work.
And giving students a problem frame and letting them define the research question or methods is a brilliant way to foster inquiry. Of course, teachers are still there to coach and provide checkpoints.
Don't forget those reflection routines, exit tickets, learning journals, or even simple prompts like, I used to, now I can. These help students see their own growth over time.
And bringing in authentic audiences, like presenting to community members or publishing work, can really motivate students and show them their learning has value beyond the classroom.
So, how do we ensure equitable participation? A big part is establishing inclusive norms and routines, things like co-creating classroom norms and teaching discussion protocols.
Structured participation formats are a game changer. Think pair share, Socratic seminars, jigsaw activities. Assigning and rotating roles in groups helps keep everyone engaged and accountable.
And intentionally forming groups by mixing abilities, interests, and considering language backgrounds or social dynamics can really improve collaboration.
Making participation visible is key too. Using rubrics or simple checklists to document contributions and even peer evaluation helps ensure everyone has a voice.
Differentiating access and support is essential. That means providing things like sentence starters, graphic organizers, or offering flexible formats, audio, visual, hands-on, so all learners can participate.
And removing barriers to student voice, allowing alternative ways to contribute, like digital forums or small group discussions, and teaching respectful disagreement and evidence-based argumentation.
Culturally responsive practices are also important. Connecting content to students' backgrounds and validating diverse perspectives makes learning more inclusive and relevant.
When it comes to designing lessons, everything starts with clear competencies and student outcomes, turning them into those can-do objectives that combine knowledge, skill, and context.
A good driving question is next: open, compelling, and connected to a real-world context. For example, how can we reduce single-use plastic in our neighbourhood? That gets students thinking and investigating.
Then, co-create the success criteria and assessment plan with students. Make the criteria public and use them for regular formative checks. Students know exactly what's expected and can track their own progress.
Sequencing learning in inquiry stages is so effective. Start with a hook to spark curiosity. Then move into investigation, creation, sharing, and finally reflection and revision.
And be sure to build in scaffolds, like models or mini-lessons, but gradually fade them as students become more confident. Integrate regular formative assessment and feedback loops so students can act on feedback straight away.
Incorporating student voice at key points in the design is crucial too. Let them choose the questions, resources, or formats, and use their input to adapt pacing or assessment.
And always make space for collaboration and reflection. Design group tasks with both interdependence and individual accountability, and use reflection prompts to tie everything back to the learning goals.
Technology can be a real enabler here, as long as it's chosen purposefully. Collaborative documents, multimedia tools, and formative assessment apps can all help. But it's important not to use tech just for the sake of it.
Let's touch on some practical examples. One short inquiry lesson might be, analyze primary and secondary sources for bias. Start by showing contrasting clips or articles. Teach a checklist for spotting bias. Then have students investigate in pairs, share findings, and reflect with an exit ticket.
And the teacher's role there is to model, circulate, ask probing questions, and provide feedback. Students get to choose which evidence to highlight and how to present it, so their voice is front and center.
Or for a longer, multi-week project, students could design a solution to reduce single-use plastic in their community. They choose which aspect to tackle, the format of their product, and their audience. Teachers coach teams, run mini workshops, and provide formative feedback throughout.
Equity strategies for that might include scaffolding research templates, translating materials, and even partnering multilingual students. Bringing in community mentors adds a real-world connection too.
Assessment and feedback practices need to be aligned to competency scales, and students should be involved in self and peer assessment. Feedback should always focus on next steps and allow for revision.
And don't forget process indicators, like collaboration and inquiry habits, not just the final product. Tools like choice boards, co-created rubrics, learning logs, and digital portfolios can really support this approach.
A teacher reflection checklist is great for after a lesson. Ask, did students make choices? Were learning targets clear? Was there a compelling question? Were supports in place for diverse learners? Did collaboration happen with clear roles? Was feedback provided and acted on? Did students reflect and set next steps?
If the answer to any of those is no, it's a chance to make one or two concrete changes next time, maybe to increase agency, equity, or inquiry. That's how you keep evolving your practice.
So, applying student-centered principles does take intentional design and consistent routines, but the payoff is huge. You're cultivating those 21st century competencies, critical thinking, creativity, collaboration, communication, by putting students at the center of meaningful and relevant learning.
Absolutely, and that's what education should be all about. We hope you found these strategies and principles helpful.